Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts Naturescapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highway Cantina in Edo.
Don't sweat the technique.
It's the Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of the Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Blank, I'm Branham. A-Rod filling in for Brian today. It is a Wednesday edition of the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Highway Cantina in Edo. Food, very, very good. It's fantastic. Looks very, very good. Chips and salsa. They passed the Blankers test. Chips and salsa.
I love this place, but I love their red sauce. Their salsa is unbelievable.
Very good. Looking forward to trying some of that later. We hope that you come on out. We understand that it's a Wednesday. You might be working. Well, if you want something to do once you get off work, this is the spot. Maybe some folks over the Astros game will walk over, too, because you could park right here and head over to Minute Maid. It's not that far of a walk. Astros are playing right now. We'll talk a lot about that game probably once it goes final. They're trying to mount another comeback, kind of how they did yesterday. That was a good win for the Astros yesterday. You forced the rubber game today. You were down in that ball game, so there's a couple of ways you could have lost. We talk about how any time you throw the big three in the bullpen, Abreu, Presley, Josh Hader, that you need to win the ball game. Brian Abreu gave up the lead. It was a tie game when he came in, gave up that home run that just barely found its way into the Crawford boxes. But then Presley did what he had to do. The offense got you back into it. And then Josh Hader, the gamer, another two-inning performance, picks up the W for the Houston Astros.
Loved all of it. As much as you were in command of the game, the game one of this series, and then let it slip away thanks to Fromber's meltdown, last night to me it felt like they were playing. It was never their game to win. It felt like they were always kind of playing catch up and that they were just going to fall a little short, especially after Singleton's big bomb, and you're hoping you get some momentum from that, and then right after that you give up a bomb, as you mentioned, to lose the lead again. That was a big win for them, and there's so many different ways you can look at guys that stepped up. I love Hader doing it again. I mean, 31 pitches, the guy comes in, and now two innings is just another thing that he does. I mean, it's unfortunate the broadcast started talking about it last night when he only had like 7 or 8 pitches through 2 outs, and then the pitches started stacking up a little bit. But tough as nails for him to come in and do what he did and for them to get that victory. That was a really good win.
Yeah, Hader, I was excited when they signed Hader because he's a really good reliever. I did have some hesitation with the contract, and I still have hesitation with the contract. Like, relievers are volatile. You give a reliever a 5-year deal, big money, you know, sometimes that can come back to bite you. And it was biting you for the first couple of months, maybe a month and a half of the season. But Hader is certainly winning me over. Like, I think I'm falling in love with Josh Hader because he's a gamer. Like, he gives you these multi-innings, which everybody was, oh, he's never going to do that. He's never going to do that. And ESPN had an article about it yesterday, actually, right on cue about how Hader, and we've talked about this, he made a business decision whenever he told Milwaukee, look, these are the Hader rules. I'm going to pitch one inning. I'm going to get you 3 outs. I'm not going to throw 3 days in a row. And he did that because they screwed him over in arbitration. They said, yeah, you're a good reliever and all, but you're not racking up saves. Oh, that's what I need? Okay, well, I'm going to have Hader rules until I get financially taken care of. And we give him a lot of grief, not we, maybe just people in baseball, because he wasn't like the guy who would go multiple innings. He wasn't the guy that would take the baseball every single day. And he got a bad rap for that. But now that he's been financially taken care of, we're like, okay. Hader's like, okay, well, you take care of me. You're loyal to me. I'm going to be loyal to you. And I find it funny, too. Like, whenever we look at football players, whenever they hold out, like, in training camp, we never give those guys grief, right? We never give a guy who's holding out from training camp grief because he wants a new contract. We're like, oh, well, that's business. That's the financial side of the game. How come Hader didn't get that same narrative? How come Hader didn't give, well, that's the business side, no big deal. We're not going to mess with business. We're not going to mess with somebody's pocket. I think Hader got a bad rap for that.
Yeah, I think it's different because of the fact that in baseball, your teammates aren't understanding as much as the whole mantra of stay out of another man's money. You know, Burrow was the last guy to kind of get his hand slapped. Baker Mayfield had got into it at one point because you never comment on another guy's contract situation. that's fine. You don't mess with the money. But when you get Musgrove and guys like that on the Padres team that are calling out the fact that he's not going two innings, and whether they put two and two together or they care or not, they're ticked off he's not going two innings because they don't care about his contract as much as they care for this that season and that team getting the best players to perform the best when they needed them. It's understandable as a teammate. You always want and expect everything out of your teammates, but you're right. It really factors into everybody's situation is different. And if you run the risk of doing some big-time damage to your arm when you haven't gotten paid yet and because you had a squab with your own organization to where, hey, turnaround is fair play. If you're going to screw me over in arbitration, then I'm not going to go that extra mile for you. It's tough for a teammate to get involved in the middle, even if it's just so much as just commenting in the media, because that just lets you know in the locker room it's been noticed. And that's a tough situation.
It was kind of soft, though, by Musgrove to wait till he's gone.
For
like,
sure.
That's pretty soft of him. But you're right that it's more acceptable in football than it is in baseball. And I don't really love that. But I appreciate that he's willing to give you more than an inning. Like, you're going to pay me $90, $95 million. I'm willing to give you a second inning. Astros needed that yesterday. That was huge. Maybe we buried the lead, though, because Kyle Tucker had a double dong game. Kyle Tucker now leads all of baseball in home runs with 17. That dude is so good right now. We were talking about this the other day. I think he's the best hitter in baseball right now. Maybe over the course of 162, somebody will pass him. Soto will pass him. Somebody will have a better year. But for my money, to this point of the year, I think Kyle Tucker is the best offensive player in all of baseball.
Yeah, I mean, you think about the guys that might be in the conversation. Juan Soto's probably in the conversation. There's a few others.
Ohtani, probably.
Yeah, what's his name in Baltimore?
Gunnar Henderson.
Henderson's in the conversation. But other than that, you look at it and say the hottest guy right now, the best hitter right now that's on just a complete burner, it's got to be Kyle Tucker. I mean, look, is it in this series or in this homestand? He's had two home run games. He's absolutely on fire. Don't change the orange cleats. Leave them on now for the foreseeable future because we know he's superstitious with the gloves and the bare hands and all the things. He tried the orbit green cleats. They didn't work for three at-bats. He changed them back to the orange ones and goes two bombs in his last two at-bats. He's on fire. You love to see it. And this team is doing everything the right way. Again, last night, he carries them to a big degree. And you just can't say enough about a guy that, look, we both have been on record as saying, don't think he's going to resign here. Don't think that they're going to extend the money and the years that he's going to be looking for. But he's earning every penny for whoever pays him right now with the way he's playing.
Yeah, he's been he's outstanding. OPS, he's second in all of baseball behind only Shohei Ohtani. So if you want to, well, Ohtani's a little bit better. Okay, I could hear you on that. But Tucker has more home runs. Tucker has the speed element. And Tucker didn't have Tommy John surgery last season. Christian Javier.
Well, Tucker's not pitching.
Either. Actually, let's talk about Pena first. Let's keep it the good news before we talk about Christian Javier. This guy's turning into, dare I say it, a star? Dare I say that Jeremy Pena is turning into a star? That at-bat that he had in the 10th inning, he's behind 0-2 like in a blink of an eye. Fouls off a couple of pitches, spits on one pitch or two, I can't remember the count, and then hits a missile to right field to win the game. And that's just one plate appearance of Jeremy Pena, who's one of the leaders in the AL in batting average, one of the leaders in hits. He's playing a high-level defensive shortstop. We're watching Jeremy Pena mature into one of the better shortstops in all of baseball. Now, I'm not going to say number one like I'm saying Kyle Tucker,
right?
But I think he's a top seven shortstop in all of the big leagues.
Yeah, you and I were talking about it the other day, and I said right now he's top 10 in baseball, and there's no reason to believe if he keeps doing this, and basically right before our eyes showing you that everything that he worked on in the offseason and the way he kind of, I don't want to say abbreviated his swing, but he quieted it down and he kind of, he shortened it to some degree, but he also isn't chasing the outside breaking pitch as much. The pitch that he hit last night going the other way, taking a ball to right field, he looks like a different and more disciplined hitter at the plate. He's been fantastic. And there, I think, yeah, you can say top seven. I'm not going to argue that. I'm not going to think that you're wrong for saying that because the numbers are there offensively, and you and I have been adamant about the fact that he is an above-average defender, one of the better defenders in this league. You've seen it on this homestand. You've seen it again this year. Defense hasn't taken a step back at all. Offense has bumped up yet again, and there's no reason to believe that he can't get better.
Yeah, his offense is unbelievable. Like you could, if you're glass half full, glass half empty, you can take the first 2 years of Jeremy Pena and kind of make a conclusion. Like if you're glass half full, okay, we'll take the better of year one whenever you're hitting for power, you were hitting home runs, and then take the developments of year two whenever you were laying off more pitches out of the zone, you were drawing more walks, you were hitting for a higher average. you could say, okay, well, put those things together and you have a really good offensive player. You could also go the negative way. You could say, well, look at the things that he didn't do in year one, where he's striking out at everything, he's not walking. Look at year two, where he's hitting with absolutely no power, and then that's the player he's going to be in year three. I think the trump card here, though, is work ethic. I really do. I think it's a player that is willing to put in the work very hard, and get to a result that he wanted. Because if Jeremy Pena didn't have the work and didn't he was lazy and all of those things, I don't think we'd be seeing this in year three. I think we would be seeing the glass half empty of the worst of his previous first 2 years in baseball.
Well, and you look at it, too, and Ari Alexander did a piece in the offseason with him on the fact that twofold he was working every day. And he was doing it on his conditioning, his core, doing things that were gonna benefit him during the season, not just bulking up to get bigger, because we know he's got the gun show going on. But then when you look at the second half of the day when he was in the cages and he was working on doing the things that they highlighted later in spring training about him changing and staying more quiet, getting ready for the pitches while in the box, and doing some of the things that he did to alter his swing, it's all paid off. It's all to the point where you're looking at this kid and you're going, look, he works his rear end off, but at the same time, he has all the ability in the world offensively and defensively, and if he continues doing this, like, be happy he's your shortstop. Stop nitpicking him, because I don't want to go back to the guy that, you know, didn't have any power last year while he was trying to work things out and try and hit for a better average. You're getting the best of all worlds. You're getting more pop, more extra base hits, better plate discipline, getting on base, and still playing above average defense. That's a great package for you to have at shortstop.
Yeah, it's been it's fun to watch him. He's my first name brethren, so I have a bias there. I root for him.
Paul sings for you both.
Yeah, before Jeremy Pena had this song, Jeremy Branham had that song. Now it's Highway Cantina, which might be my favorite of them all. Highway Cantina from Paul Gallant is fantastic. Now we got to talk about the bat. Christian Javier, yesterday, he's been up and down. Like, since he came back from the injury, Detroit got four outs, got lit up for five runs. His second start against Oakland, and it was the single A's, he was dominant. Six shutout innings, struck out eight. And then yesterday, it was the Christian Javier that we saw against Detroit. Four runs, four innings. Was lucky, I think, to only give up four runs in four innings. Christian Javier has turned where he can't be a reliable pitcher. And this, honestly, it predates the three starts. If you want to go back to the second half of last year when I thought he was a little chunky, he was not very good in the second half of last season. Look how the season ended last year with Christian Javier in a Game 7 in the ALCS against the Rangers. Couldn't get out of the first inning. And he started off good this year. And it's like, okay, great. You know, Christian Javier of old, he's back. But I don't know how you can look at these last three starts, two extremely poor, one good, and have any confidence in Christian Javier to be a consistent pitcher for you.
You can't. I mean, we should probably flip the theme songs for him and Fromber just to try and change the progression of both of them, because he's now the roller coaster that's up and down all over the place, and maybe Suavemente can do something to kind of help Fromber settle in. But when you look at it, his velo was down last night. Yeah. His fastball velo was down. Everything seemed to be right. That any of his strikes were seemingly right there in the heart of the plate. He just did not look like his normal self. I don't know if something's wrong with him or not, but right now he's a microcosm of this Astros baseball team from the early part of the season. He's been hurt, so injuries were a factor, as we are told. And then he's been up and down, and he's been inconsistent. And it's the same kind of things that we're talking about with the team in general when they got off to a slow start. He's already under contract. You already locked him down. You got to figure out what's going on, and he's another guy different in the Fromber circumstances, because Fromber's everything between his ears. But you got to start dialing down and trying to figure out what's going on with Christian Javier, because he's too important and he's going to be long-term locked for you, that you can just let him keep doing this and flipping a coin of which guy's going to show up.
Yeah, I don't know what's wrong with him. Like, is it the velo? Like, the velo is down a mile per hour from last year. It was down a little bit yesterday. Do you think he's hurt?
It's weird because the velo's down. Last night the velo was down a mile and a half per hour on the fastball, but the spin rate was up on what his average spin rate was on his breaking pitches. So if you do have arm problems, normally you don't want to torque it and spin it as much when you're throwing breaking pitches. I don't know, and it can't be tired, right? I mean, he had the offseason, a longer offseason. Yes, they were at the postseason for a while, but it seems like he shouldn't be tired already.
The only thing that I don't even know if I believe this. This is just my theory, and I'm sticking to it. I think he was a pitch clock guy. I think that Javier, like, if you go back to pre-pitch clock, Javier would take a lot of times in between pitches. And was that like enough time to ramp up to be able to throw a little higher velo? Like, you work out, I'm anti-exercise, you could probably answer this better than me, but if you're doing bench press and you rest for 60 seconds as opposed to 20 seconds, you're going to have a little bit more strength. You're going to be more rested to have more maximum strength than with the pitch clock or with the 20 seconds. So looking back at last year, and I thought he was overweight last year. I think that's why he had the issues with the pitch clock. But, you know, maybe it's a conditioning thing, because before the injury, he was pitching really well, and he talked about how in the offseason he dropped double-digit pounds. I think it was 10 to 15 pounds that he dropped, which is, like, great, because I think that was the issue last year. I wonder if he lost some of his conditioning while he was hurt, like, while he had the neck issue. Because, like, I mean, if you're trying to recover from a strained neck, you're probably not going to be running in the outfield. So I wonder if he lost a bit of conditioning during the injury, but you would think now three starts post-injury that that'd be built back up again.
It's legitimately possible simply because of the fact that even when they say, well, ride the stationary bike or ride the recumbent bike, there's still going to be a kind of reaction in your spine and in your neck because of the way your spine is sitting and you're on the seat of a bike trying to get exercise. It's legitimately a possibility that he wasn't getting his work in with his legs, with his cardio. And on top of that, if he can't throw at all because of the neck, then maybe that's also the fact that his arm wasn't as stretched out per se or as strong as it's been. I don't know, but they've got to figure it out, because you can't say that he can go and put six scoreless innings up against the A's and the velocity wasn't an issue and it looked like he was more like himself, and then come back with this one and he falls off the planet again.
Yeah, it's the only thing I can think about. I'm really not all that confident in it, to be completely clear. All right, 713-780-ESPN. We are broadcasting live at Highway Cantina, so we got our eyes on the game. They're a great spot to watch the game, right above the bar, wall-to-wall TVs, great spot to watch the Stros, great spot to hang out pre- and post-game from the Stros, Dynamo, Rockets, anything in the Houston area. So we'll keep our eye on it for you. Busy show today. It is a Wednesday, so we got a lot to get to. We mentioned Kyle Tucker. I have a theory on Kyle Tucker's contract that I'm going to run by you guys. Amin Thompson, all-rookie second team. What is his ceiling? We'll discuss that later. And also, the Rockets are in on a big name this offseason. We'll talk about that. But the Texans started their OTAs yesterday. What are the biggest questions entering OTAs for the Houston Texans? 713-780-ESPN. We're on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. On YouTube at ESPN Houston. Blankers is at Pac-Man Joel. No Brian today, so we're going to have to give out his Twitter handle. And I'm at Jeremy Branham. It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highway Cantina in Edo. Here's the Killer Bees, Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
He's Blank on Branham. Killer Bees broadcasting live from Highway Cantina in Edo. Come say hello. Drop by. Say hello. Yell at Blankers. We'd all appreciate that. Texans opened up.
All but me.
That's okay. You're selfless.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm not reading that text. If it's the pitch clock, then we need to point the finger at the pitching coach for lack of preparation. I've seen Miller and Murphy get a lot of heat about the Astros pitching staff. How much do you give validation to that take?
Pitchers got to pitch, man. I don't think that it's vastly different from what the legend and god in some people's minds of Brent Strom did with this pitching staff, because these guys kind of learned under Stromy before they took the reins. I think at a certain point, when you start thinking about how many guys have been injured, how many guys maybe were pitching before they got injured and they weren't themselves, like, maybe there's something to the regimen that they do and the conditioning that they do prior to and, you know, getting into spring training and the start of the season. But at the end of the day, these guys have got to execute pitches. Like, you can't blame the pitching coaches for the way Fromber melted down the other night. We don't know what's going on with Javier to say it's this, that, the other thing. Now, the one thing that I would say is that someone listens to the Killer Bees with Hunter Brown today, because he really toned down how many pitches he was throwing, and it seemed like that he was throwing more of just his main two pitches.
Yeah, sir, I didn't realize that. I realized that he was throwing the fastball a high percentage of time. I was listening to the call coming in, and they were talking about how many fastballs he threw. I didn't realize.
Oh, it was fastball slider. He was doing what we had said he should probably start trying.
Still a little frustrating the way that start kind of ended in the fifth inning. But yeah, I don't really put a whole lot of stock in the pitching coach thing, because I mean the Astros led baseball in ERA the first year of Miller and Murphy. So, like, if they're going to lead baseball in ERA, then it's like, okay, great. Well, those guys must be doing their job. And then when things start to go poorly, it's, oh, the pitching coaches are at fault. Well, like, how much stock are you putting in year one? How much stock are you putting in year three? I don't think that they're poor. I don't think they need to be fired. Would I want Brent Strom back? Yes. Yes, 100% yes. I do have more confidence in Brent Strom.
I was a big fan of Stromy, but there's a different conversation to be had. Do you like it? Do you want Brent Strom? To me, it's the fact that everybody's looking for someone to blame when things aren't going well. And if it's not Joe Espada, well, then it's his two pitching coaches. And it's got to be someone's fault, and they want to give the player the benefit of the doubt. A lot of times, just look at the player and say, hey, look, they got to look in the mirror first before you start putting the crosshairs on the coaching staff.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I don't really put a whole lot of validity into that take. Texans started OTAs yesterday. John Alexander, Houston Chronicle, covers the Texans really well. He listed some things that you should be looking for at OTAs. How do the rookies fit in? This is my favorite thing. Like, whenever you have young players, I want to see, okay, well, where are they in the depth chart? Where are they playing? What are the Texans doing? And I know you can't tell a whole lot from OTAs, but you can kind of get some ideas about where they're going to be on the depth chart. That's one of my favorite things about OTAs. Like, I don't really care a whole lot about C.J. Stroud throwing footballs. It was cool to see Tank Dell out there because Tank Dell, you know, he got shot. So it's good to see him playing well. But I don't care about, like, Nico Collins. I don't really care about the veterans. I know what those guys can bring to the table. One of my favorite things about OTAs is how the rookies do fit in.
No, I'm with you. I think that that's exactly what should excite people instead of worrying about, you know, how many veterans are and aren't at OTAs right now. I mean, the main thing is you want to see the development of the guys you just drafted. You want to see guys that were young on this team last year taking another step to where maybe they become pieces, whether that's special teams, depth pieces, or maybe start competing for different positions or backup positions on this roster. And I think that you know that they're in a structured system right now where there is a lot of weight put on that in the offseason, development in the weight room, development on the football field with the playbook, to where it is fun to watch because now you're in a situation, too, with a team that's competitive where you've kind of got the right mix of the veterans that you desperately needed a couple years ago when we were talking about the Fighting Rex Burkheads, and now looking at a great mix of talented young players along with talented veterans, some of which they just brought in, and now you're just looking for the guys that can kind of connect the dots on the remaining spots and the issues like special teams. And that's a great spot to be in. That's why this is kind of fun, because this is the first baby step in the development of these guys leading into training camp where they could actually be difference makers.
How is Tank Dell in his health? That was another question from Alexander. Of course, like that's something that you do want to know because you have the uncertainty. Like, they told you he's fine. They told you he's going to be all right. But is he on the practice field running around? There was videos that came out yesterday where it looks like he didn't miss a beat. So that's really cool to see because that means, okay, well, Tank Dell is good enough to be on the football field. Tank Dell is good enough to probably play in a game if you had one tomorrow.
Yeah, well, remember that, too, because when everybody was asking, they were like, well, look, he's going to make a full recovery from a health perspective, and then we're going to, you know, they were kind of more tight-lipped on where he was going to return to football activities. How was he? What was it? We still didn't know. Yep. The fact that you now see him with a helmet on the practice field, running routes, catching balls, smiling, tells you everything you need to know. This guy's going to be ready when the lights go on for training camp and when the season starts, and that's the biggest breath of fresh air where you can just exhale and go, okay, that's good, because you don't want an injury like that to affect you before you even hit the field for training camp.
The next three were all things that, like, I don't think are really football related, and I don't think they're OTA related. Nico Collins extension this offseason, like, I don't think that's OTA related. How good can the new defense be? Maybe, but like, Danielle Hunter's not even there, so like, they're not even going to be, and they're not going to let you hit CJ Stroud. And the final one is a big year for CJ Stroud. We hope that it's a big year for C.J. Stroud, but there's no way to tell that in OTAs.
No, there's not. I mean, the thing that you're looking at, too, is the fact that everybody always says, well, is there going to be a sophomore slump? I don't think that there's going to be, but I'm sure there's going to be naysayers and doubters that say, well, now let's see what he's really made of, because now he's getting all this attention, the team's getting attention, the schedule's tougher. Can he do this for another year? I'm not worried about those things. I think from a defensive perspective, that's the fun one, because what we're really talking about right now, because I'm really excited about El Shaair, and the more I hear him talking, the more I know that there is that true chemistry between him and D'Amico, and he's really going to be kind of like that guy that's running everything and the focal point in the middle of the defense. That's fantastic, because now, whether Jimmy Ward is going to be healthy Jimmy Ward or not, when you look at the guys and the pieces, yeah, there's a question at the other corner opposite of Stingley, but if you get any kind of production at all from that other corner position, there's no reason to start talking about this as one of the better defenses in the NFL.
713-780-ESPN. What do you care about in OTAs? And how about those day one OTA observations? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. There aren't many things that are more annoying than potholes. I know you've done everything to try to fix the potholes that you have authority over, and I know that nothing works. Well, we have something that will work, and there's something you can do to change about those nasty potholes. Mechanical concrete from Third Rock Renewables. That's right. Third Rock Renewables, patented technology, mechanical concrete, changing the game and fixing these annoying potholes for good. And they're going to cut your maintenance costs by 75% while also lowering your carbon emissions. I know it sounds too good to be true, but it's not. It is true. And also, if you mention ESPN 97.5, you get 20% off of mechanical concrete for Third Rock Renewables. So you're cutting your maintenance costs by 75%, you're lowering your carbon emissions, and you're going to get an additional 20% off when you mention ESPN 97.5. Just find out how they can help you. Fix your parking lot, your road, your lay-down yard, or wherever you have a pothole with Third Rock Renewables mechanical concrete. It's the only low-cost, industrial-strength, sustainable base that turns these end-of-life tires into an indestructible build product for those potholes, for the ranch roads, for the lay-down yards, for the parking lots. Call now. Figure out, learn more. 713-305-0507. Figure out how they can help you. 713-305-0507. And visit Third Rock online as well at thirdrockrenewables.com. That's thirdrockrenewables.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highway Cantina in Edo.
Astros just lost to the Angels. We'll talk about the OTA observations a little bit later. Astros fall in the rubber game, the series finale against the Anaheim Angels, 2-1. Astros fall in the third game. A lot to take from this one because Hunter Brown started this game. And if you would say, okay, Hunter Brown's going to give you two runs on two hits, he's going to walk three, which he's always going to walk a few, he's going to strike out three over six innings, and you ask anybody, would you take that? I think everybody takes
that.
Everybody takes two runs, six innings for Hunter Brown. But Hunter Brown, in typical Hunter Brown fashion, still finds a way to frustrate you, to absolutely make you pull your hair out. Because how he gave up those two runs, fifth inning, he walks Mickey Moniak, who is not very good. He's got an OPS under 500. He's got a 185 batting average, not very good. And then he has Paris up, the nine-hole hitter. He's up in the count 1-2, throws a couple pitches out of the zone. All of a sudden, it's a 3-2 count. And he throws a sinker middle to a 138 hitter who hits the ball out of the ballpark. So you walk a 185 guy, you give up a two-run dog to a 138 hitter. That's how the Angels scored their two runs. And, yes, you'll take six runs, two innings from Hunter Brown every single time. But, again, in typical Hunter Brown fashion, he finds a way to frustrate you.
It's so frustrating because even last night when you look at Javier and you look at a lot of the shortcomings of this pitching staff lately, it's the fact that they either are way up in a count and they're throwing two hittable pitches, or that they don't know how to kind of nurture their way through a count when they are up in it to the point where then they get behind and then they groove something like you just mentioned. The fact of the matter is Hunter Brown still, when we talk about arm and having, you know, a starting pitcher's arm but not learning how to pitch yet, I think he's still trying to figure out how to pitch because he just makes too many mistakes where we talk about Fromber's mistakes being a different kind of mental. But from this perspective, and I thought that they really were going to have Caratini as a guy that was going to kind of try and as a veteran kind of work with him more on that kind of stuff. Because when you look at it, you're right. I mean, when he's up in a count and he's got good stuff, we always talk about competitive pitches. Don't throw pitches that not only are balls, but when they come out of your hand and in the direction that they immediately take tells the hitter, I'm laying off of it. I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to protect and guard the plate because I got two strikes. Until you get to a point where they're in command of the count, they're ahead in the count, and then you throw something right to the barrel. That's got to change. That's when you want to talk about between the pitching coaches and a veteran catcher like Caratini, that's something that they've got to work in between starts, and he's got to start thinking more about those situations.
Yeah, see, I think it's command. Well, it's always command. Like, I'm pretty sure that he's like, let me be competitive with this pitch. And, like, they interviewed Joe Espada in the second inning today, and they even talked about that, how they want him to be more competitive when he's ahead of the count. And you go look at the at-bat. Look, it's never acceptable to walk at the 8-hole hitter when he has a sub-200 batting average, and then it's not acceptable to give up a 2-run dong to a dude who has a 138 batting average.
And he was hitting 9 today, Paris, right?
Paris was, yeah, you walk the 8-hole and you give up a 2-run homer to the 9-hole.
And the when you talk about the microcosm of the season,
yep.
The 9-hole hitter against the Astros this year should be an all-star.
Yeah, I mean, King of Twitch says 7, 8, 9 are killing the Astros pitching staff this year, and he's absolutely right. And Hunter Brown's an example of that, because Hunter Brown was dominant today. Like, he really was. His fastball was getting in on hitters. Joe Adell, I think he had his bat crack, and then he had another one that he hit it off the tape on his bat. Like, Hunter Brown, and again, this is like the microcosm of Hunter Brown, is he shows you these glimpses and these moments of brilliance. Because for the most of his start, other than those two at-bats, plate appearances, he was really stinking good. But you walk an 8-hole hitter, you're up in the count against the 9-hole hitter 1-2, and it's like, put him away. But to your point about not being competitive on those pitches, I just pulled up the pitch-by-pitch game cast here. On a 1-2 pitch, he throws a fastball. What is that, three baseballs out of the zone high?
Yep. I mean,
that's three baseballs out of the zone high. That's not competitive. That's an easy take. That's not giving him anything to really – like, it's not constructive at all. You throw a 1-2 breaking ball that's in the zone for 90% of its flight, and then it, you know, darts out of the zone. That's a pitch that's a good take. That's something that he has, like, you know, it's in the zone, you spit on it, that's a really good take. This is the easiest take you can see, a fastball that's three baseballs out of the strike zone up. His 2-2 pitch was a sinker that's three baseballs inside. He probably had to jump out of the way. So that's the perfect example of what you're talking about, not being competitive when you're ahead in the count. And then his 3-2 pitch to the 9, he's trying to challenge. He doesn't want to walk back-to-back hitters. He throws a sinker middle-middle. 2-run homer for a guy who has no business hitting a home run on Hunter Brown, and the Astros lose 2-1. Yes, you take 2 runs over 6 innings anytime Hunter Brown's on the mound, but these are the little things that drive you crazy about Hunter Brown, because, like, it could have been 6 shutout innings very, very easily.
Yeah, and that's kind of... Again, when you look at the way this season has gone, that's the kind of things that we're talking about. And one of the things when we talk about, well, hits with runners in scoring position, starting pitchers being injured, those kind of things. The other thing that you got to think about is across the pitching staff, for the most part, control has been a major issue. We know the same thing we've been saying about that, Javier. We were saying about J.P. France. We've been saying about Arrigetti to some point. That's got to be something where teachable moments, but, you know, when you say that every pitcher is different and you're working on different things with different guys, but overall, whether it's when you get together in spring training as a pitching staff for the first or second time, you want to set the tone right away and say, we are going to be focused on with our control, making sure we are competitive with even our pitches that we don't want to throw for strikes. Because it seems to be a tone throughout the entire pitching staff right now, at least with the starters, that you have to kind of focus and dial in on more. I know he's a work in progress, but when you see the way his fastball was riding in on hitters, his two-seam and his four-seam, he has such good velocity, and then when he gets that kind of movement, he was getting inside and sawing guys off. He was getting guys up on their front foot because of how competitive that and how fast they have to react to that fastball heading up upstairs on the outside part or wherever he was placing that thing. And you also have to start thinking about when you think about, like, thinking through at-bats, right? It's the same thing we talked about the other night with the Verlander at-bat against Contreras. At a certain point, you either don't throw it middle-middle, or you throw something if you can throw a competitive pitch again that starts out coming out of your hand looking like a strike, but by the time it gets near the dish, it's somewhere out of the zone where you can't get touched up like that. Those are things that I think that they still have to really focus on.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think the desire is there, though.
Yep.
I think that the 1-2 is there. I just think he has trouble with the command, and that's what leads to, okay, I want this pitch right at the top of the zone, maybe a baseball out of the top of the zone, and because his command is poor, all of a sudden that one baseball or half a baseball out of the zone becomes 3 baseballs out
flattens
of the zone.
Flattens out or whatever.
And I mean, this, like, in the grand scheme of things, if the Astros would have won this game and he gave that up, like, we would be, okay, that's a promising start for Hunter Brown. So, yes, it is still a promising start for Hunter Brown. But at the same time, even a promising start from Hunter Brown drives you up the wall. 3691 offense, all capital letters, two exclamation marks, 8437, one run against a nobody team. Brown did his job with giving up only two runs. Offense just disappeared. That's true. That is true.
You can't argue that. I mean, look, they made Anderson look like a Cy. You and I were talking about it in the last break. He made Anderson look like a Cy Young candidate. I mean, he's sitting there at the edge of the dugout at the end knowing that he just shut down a really good baseball team and had him eaten out of his hand all game long, went deeper than he probably is used to going, had total command of everything. And the play that's going to come back to haunt them is the fact that Mauricio Dubon, after Jake Meyers got a leadoff single, you're down that one run because of the home run. You have a chance to be right back in this ball game in the driver's seat by manufacturing the two runs you need because he gets the extra base hit. It's an easy double. Nobody out, but he tries for third. He gets thrown out, and that completely thwarts what might have been a really good opportunity and your final opportunity, as it turned out, to really solidify the fact that you're tied in and you're in a game just like you were last night. It's not a good base running move from a team that Joe Espada wants to be more aggressive on the base pass, but you got to be smarter in that situation. With nobody out, you don't get the first out at third base down a run.
Yeah, I mean, I've said it dozens of times. This is not the team that you want to have an aggressive base running team with because they don't really have good base runners. Like, they have a few. But Altuve hasn't been somebody who's a good base runner over the course of his career. I think that Mauricio Dubon tries to show off his skill set a lot. Maybe it's because he's a utility guy that's trying to earn his way in the lineup more often. But how many times have you seen Mauricio Dubon try to, like, unleash his cannon of an arm? And it's like, okay, that was unnecessary in that juncture of the game. And it's usually not accurate. I think it was the same thing here. He's like, oh, let me be, you know, really smart. And you see a throw coming to the plate, overshoots the cutoff man. Let me take the extra base and show off my speed a little bit when it's not the time to do it. I mean, you're taught whenever you're 5 years old, never make the first or third out at third base, especially if you're the stinking tie and run late in the game. That was a brain fart from Mauricio Dubon, no doubt about it. 6-9-4-1, good Hunter Brown, with the exception of those two hitters. Bad Dubon getting thrown out at third, getting greedy, 100%. And then the ugly Bregman, I think, 0-for-10 now. This texter as well, 713-780-3776. Glad Bregman has had a good series 2 weeks ago, moves back to the cleanup spot, back to flirting with the Mendoza line. Dude needs to be hitting ninth until he gets to 250. Bregman was 0-for-4 today. I don't know if it was the last 0-for-10, but I'll trust you. I haven't looked at it.
He came up in that last spot, too, with two on, two out, and couldn't get anything, you know, popped up.
I'm back on the let's demote Alex Bregman again. Let's move him down in the batting order. Let's see. Bregman, 0 for his last – actually, it's greater than 0 for his last 10.
Last two games,
he's
for sure.
0-for-13 in his last three. In this series, he was 0-for-13. Like, in this series alone, he was 0-for-13, and he was hitting fourth in all of those games. I agree with the texture. I think I wouldn't go as far to nine. Like, moving back to six.
Yep.
Maybe even below Meyers. Like, I wouldn't hate him hitting after Jake Meyers, but he shouldn't be in the cleanup spot, especially with how Jeremy Pena is hitting. Jake Meyers is hitting the ball well. Singleton, you know, I think Singleton's a below-average offensive first baseman, but he's your best first baseman. He's going to draw some walks. He's going to hit the ball out of the park every now and then. I would have Bregman behind all of those guys.
I would, too. I mean, look, as much as I've been critical of Jake has been on just an absolute heater, and you should not be messing with him, moving him down. And if anything, they've moved him up more because of the fact that they realize that this guy's getting it done right now. You mentioned Pena. I mean, wherever they put Pena in the lineup this year, he's hitting the baseball. He's getting you results. And, you know, again, you look at, I mentioned Anderson earlier. He throws 85 pitches in 8 innings, gives up 6 hits, and has you eating out of his hand. That should not happen with a team that's as talented as this baseball team is. And you can't have a guy hitting 203 or whatever he's hitting in the cleanup spot until he shows that he's going to keep putting it together and can get the average up. And, again, runners in scoring position has been his second biggest bugaboo this year. He can't get it done when there are runners in scoring position.
It dipped to 209 today after his 0-for-4. I think you can live with that if he was walking a ton and also slugging. But he's not slugging. He's not slugging. So you can't get away with that in your 4 spot. A couple of texters saying they heard the broadcast before the final lineout say that he was 0-for-14 going into that at-bat, so 0-for-15 now. So he must have not had a hit in the final couple of at-bats against Milwaukee, but he was 0-for-13 in this series.
Yeah, that's just not acceptable. One, as a cleanup hitter. Two, as a corner infielder that you rely so heavily on to be one of your offensive powers that can drive the baseball. Yeah, it was nice to see him kind of show signs of life. But this team, again, you know, falling now another game below 500 when you're still legitimately within reach of the division – you've got to be realistic about giving yourself your best offensive chance to win every game. I don't disagree that you know, when you get that kind of a start from Hunter Brown against a team as bad as the Angels have been, you should be more competitive and be in that baseball game. He can't be in the four hole when he's going 0 for a series when you need this win because you need to win the series. You gave one away with Fromber, and because you're still kind of trying to climb up over those two lines, the 500 line, and then trying to get back in the division race.
713-780-ESPN. Astros lose the series against the Angels, dropping the rubber game today. We'll take your thoughts on it. 713-780-3776. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. First Amendment on HR&P, Human Resources and Payroll. Cougar owned by my colleague, O'Cougs. He used to protect the Heisman Trophy winner. Now he wants to protect you and your business. Business owners, hear me out. Let HR&P help you. They can help you in HR compliance, benefits administration, payroll, onboarding. They can help you in all of those things or one of those things. HR&P can help in any way that you want them to because there's no boxes with HR&P. Doesn't matter how small the job, how big the job, HR&P completely customizes a plan for what you and your business needs. You have a problem, you have an issue, you want to take a little off your plate, a lot off your plate, HR&P will find a way to help. They do it in a way that's unique. Technology meets service. They have the best tech. You'll love that, but you'll love their service. Guaranteed fulfillment. You'll never talk to a stranger. You'll be talking to someone who knows you, and they know your business needs. Give them a call at 281-880-6525 and let HR&P customize a plan for you, 281-880-6525, or check them out at hrp.net. That's hrp.net.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, located at Highway Cantina in Edo.
It's the Bees on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5, broadcasting live from Highway Cantina in Edo. Seeing the street parking pick up after that Astros game. This is a great spot to eat before, after the game, hang out, have a margarita or two. Highway Cantina, fantastic spot in Edo. I won't sing like Paul does. I wouldn't do it justice. Astros fall in the rubber game to the Angels, 2-1. Offense couldn't get going. The two runs in a frustrating way. Walk the 8-hole. Give up a home run to the 9-hole after you're up in the count at 1-2. 2-2-3-9, even as frustrating as today is, if Fromber doesn't go rogue, you win the series. This is incredibly frustrating. I agree with this texter. Like, I'm more frustrated that the Astros lost game one than I am that they lost today. Like, a getaway day, yes, you want to score more than one run. Yes, you're a little frustrated in that fifth inning by Hunter Brown. At the same time, you should have cruised to victory in game one. You're up 6-1 with your best pitcher on the mound, and he has a meltdown by going rogue, and it forced the rubber game today. You should have been looking for the sweep today. I think that because the Astros didn't win today, they could have picked up Fromber Valdez. They could have bailed him out. We wouldn't be, you know, as upset with Fromber if the Astros still win the series, right? But the fact that they didn't, I think, does again magnify game one of the series.
Well, it shows you that how fickle baseball can be and how delicate each game can be, because you're rolling. You are stacking and racking wins. I mean, I heard Lance talking about the fact that they could run the table on the Angels, go 9-1 on the homestand, and be in an unbelievable position, just kind of overlooking the Angels. Well, they were on their way to setting the tone for the Angels series, and it looked like all systems were still go. All of a sudden, because of the game, the way it went, the way you gave it all and crumbled and melted, starting with Fromber, everybody started to go, okay, well, now let's just get back on track last night. So now, okay, all is well in the world yet again with the Houston Astros, but now you do what you do here, and you lose the series. That's not acceptable for a team like the Astros against a team like the Angels, but it all starts because once that negativity comes in, once you crumble and cough up a basically middle of the game, written it, penciled into the win column already, and you get a loss out of it, everything can change, everything can steamroll the other way, and now here you are losing a series to the Angels, and instead of possibly going 9-1 on the homestand, you're sitting here looking at 7-3 going, what could have been if you just closed the door on Fromber's start?
See, that's why I'm not all that upset about the loss is because this would have been four straight series wins. Like, that's great for anybody. You still went 7-3 on the homestand. Like, that's 70%. That's 700 winning percentage. That's solid. But again, like, you had game one locked up. You're up 6-1 in the fifth inning with Framber Valdez on the mound. That's a game that you should win with two outs. Like, that's a game that you win. So I look back. I'm more upset about game one than I am today in game three. And maybe that's me being naive. I don't know.
I say that about Anderson, but Tyler Anderson, when he was with the Dodgers, was an above-average pitcher. I mean, he's a lefty. He's a good pitcher. He can get guys out. That's great. But against this lineup, especially with how they've been hitting at home and how they've been playing overall, I would expect more. I would expect more than one run. I would expect more than, I think, six hits. That's just something to me that I don't like. But at the same time, you're right. I was really ticked off, and you know I get ticked off on game-by-game situations, but I was really ticked off that I was coasting in that Framber start going, they got this. They are still – this is it. This is when they're really turning the corner.
Yeah.
And then to see it all crumble before your eyes, and you start going, what the hell just happened? And then it has the after effect, the hangover, that leads to the rest of the series and losing the series.
7-2-3-0, I don't want to be shelling out long-term money to a man-child that can't handle any adversity. I don't think you have to worry about that. I don't think there's any chance that the Astros are going to hand out long-term money to Framber Valdez, who they still have under contract for next year. And then in the offseason, he'll be going into his age 32 year. Like, whenever he's a free agent, he's going to be 32 years old in that first year of whatever the contract is. So any idea, like, I wouldn't rule out that Framber Valdez could be a Houston Astro beyond that, because we've seen these 30-year-old pitchers, they sign these, you know, big AAV short-term deals. So I wouldn't rule the Astros out from that if Framber's really good next year. Like a Blake Snell type of deal, where it's like a one-year deal with like a second-year team option, something like that.
Montgomery.
I could see that being plausible. Again, very, very small chance. I think Framber Valdez's last year with the Astros is next year. But there's zero chance that they give him beyond a three-year deal.
No, and that's the thing that I think a lot of Astros fans lose sight of is he's not a spring chicken. He's not in his mid to late 20s looking at the prime of his career coming around the corner. You know, he's already in his early 30s. He's going to be a guy that you know, we don't know if he's going to have more arm problems, but you saw signs of something going on with his arm again this year too. And then when you see the mental side of it, and you know the fact that he's hunting big money for an extended period of time, it just doesn't seem like any of those things line up from a values perspective and a business perspective with the Astros in their front office.
Mac on YouTube, I wish the team would make up its mind and either be a good team or a crappy team. I'm over this roller coaster BS. I mean, they were 7-3 on the road trip. Like, they've won three of their last four series. Have they done it with weaker competition? Sure, but I mean, you're going to get weaker competition on the schedule. I'm not in a terrible spot right now with the Stros.
I'm not either. And because the other thing that you didn't mention there was the fact that early in the – right before you started the Angel series, and until you dropped the Framber game, there was a chance that you were four out. You could have been down – you were trying to cut it from four. Who would have thought with the way they start, how putrid they were coming out of the gates, that you could say that, yeah, it's been up and down, but guess what? They're within a handful of games of the top of the division as you get towards the end of this homestand. I think you see too many guys coming out of their slumps a little bit. You see Yordan, who got the bomb that he needed to hopefully get him going. But the main thing that's a positive, Pena, Jake, the fact that you're getting healthier, the fact that you've got enough on this roster that says if you can stay within striking distance and keep winning series and winning, what did we say, you had to win at a 62% clip to get in the playoffs.
Yeah.
If you're winning at a 70% clip at home, and it'll be more difficult on the road, but they're a good road team. Yeah. I think that's what you look at and go, that's why you can't give up on them.
Yeah, the road trip will be big. Three at Oakland coming up starting Friday, and then you're at Seattle for four beginning next Monday. So that's going to be pretty large for the Stros. Not that you have to go, like, insane there. Like, you don't have to win every one. I would even take a series split at Seattle. Like, if you take two of three against Oakland, I'd be okay with a series split in Seattle. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line. Astros morale is down after the return of Abreu was announced. Hashtag DFA. You put any stock in that?
None at all. I don't think that they're looking or they care. They're just focused on the next game on the schedule, and they were trying to keep this train rolling on the track in the right direction.
0002, now I see why Dusty and Butterknife were so close to Framber after Correa left. Who is Butterknife?
I have no idea.
Maybe Maldonado? That's my only
I'm trying to put the correlation for the name Butterknife.
Yeah, I would guess it's Maldonado just because of the context, but yeah. Let us know who Butterknife is. I've never heard that. Six games back, and it's almost June. Guy, give me a break, guys. Well, you said that we're not that upset with the Stros.
Yeah,
they're
that's
in a pretty
the
good spot.
And I don't understand it because you don't get tone in text messages. Is that are you with us that there's no need to panic yet, or are you saying, come on, guys, there's still six games out, and we're in June now. This is something to worry about. I don't understand which direction
maybe
they were going.
I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt and say that he's talking to the Texters, the doom and gloom Texters. Okay. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt because we're actually pretty positive about it.
Yep.
3306, trade Fomber Valdez for Mason Miller. Okay. Like, it's not MLB The Show. Trade Bregman for a prospect. Come on. It's not MLB The Show. 6091, Pena, no homer today. Explain, please. Did you see the play? Pena hit a ball. It was his double. He hit the ball on the here. You see right now. Actually, they're playing it on the shin. It hit the top of the Crawford box. It looked like it hit the top of the yellow line. For it to be a home run, it has to clear the yellow line. I think that they called it a home run on the field. They went to replay and overturned it. I didn't think it was a home run.
Where did the ball land?
It landed on the field.
Okay, so if it hits the yellow line and ends up in the stands, then it's obviously a home run.
Yep.
Okay.
Well, yeah, I mean, to be a homer, you got to clear the yellow line, and it never cleared the yellow line.
Well, okay, so then what happens if it hits the yellow line and then pops up in the air and ends up in the box?
I mean, at that point, it cleared the yellow line.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
Yeah, so it didn't clear the yellow line. It was the right call.
Yeah, I thought you were saying it has to clear it on the fly.
No.
Okay.
No.
Got it.
Yep. Yeah. You don't have to. It just has to clear it at some point without hitting the ground. You know, it can hit the if you had. I mean, I've never seen this happen, but if you had this really weird spin and you hit the top of the wall below the yellow line and then it spun over the wall somehow, that's a home run. But I've never seen that happen.
Well, the reason why I asked, too, is because of that quirky play earlier in the season where it hit that flat railing yellow line of the boxes, and then they didn't have the angle to see that it landed in fair territory.
Everybody said that was the wrong call after, they had a couple of days to.
Oh, that one, yeah.
That one was, which I agree with. Like, it landed in play.
Even TK said he did the investigation afterwards.
At that point, it cleared the yellow line. No, it didn't. It has to go. It did not clear the yellow line. The yellow line is at the very, very top of the wall. It's got to go above the wall. It hit the wall and then bounce back into the field of play. Like, you have to imagine that yellow line also covers the width of the wall. Like, it doesn't end there. It covers the width of the wall and not just what you see on two dimension. 713-780-ESPN. There's still plenty of time for the Mariners to suck for a couple of weeks and close the gap. They have played well. Like, I agree with this. Like, I'm not doom and gloom about the Stros. Like, neither one of us are.
No, we're not. But and the thing that you say, as you say that, is there. I believe that a lot because it is a long, grinding season, and there's going to be ebbs and flows. We've seen the Rangers struggle mightily twice now, where they've just completely just tailspun to put them within. I think as of last night, they were two games, but the Astros were two games behind Texas.
Yeah.
The fact is, Seattle hasn't done it yet. But I believe that there is a right to be able to say I expect them to. Take a step back at some point in the season as well.
40-70 could hit the glove and go over the top as well. That's true. As long as it doesn't hit the ground. How about Jose Canseco's head?
It could Canseco's head.
It can't be the ground. There's probably a better way to state that, but it can't be the ground.
Well, how many guys do we see that climb the wall in center field, look like they're making a great play, it hits into their mitt, and then when it bops out, it ends up behind the wall and it's home run?
Yeah, Butterknife instead of Machete. So they're saying that because he doesn't have the strong arm anymore, it's not as sharp. The Machete is the Butterknife. I knew it was Maldonado. I just didn't get the reference, but it makes sense now. 8410, Stros can't lose another series game to the A's and Angels the rest of the way if we want a shot at the division. I think that's we forget that the Astros, the year they won the World Series, got swept at Oakland.
Think about when the Tigers were really bad in the last couple of years and when the A's were bad in the last couple of years. They were swept by both teams. And they still ended up winning the division and a whole lot more. So you just have to understand, again, we just got done talking about it. It's the dog days of a Major League Baseball season of 162 games. You're going to lose games like the Fromber game. You're going to lose series against teams that you're supposed to beat. It's just part of the way baseball goes.
This is the text line's interesting today, and I'm sure most of you are probably leaving Minute Maid Park. 713-780-ESPN. Are you in or are you out on the Astros after they dropped their first series in the last four? 713-780-ESPN. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Guys, before we go to the break, a word from a good friend, Doc Linville. Doc Linville, best in the business at getting your hair back. Maybe you're thinning and you want to catch it before it's too late, before those follicles fall out. PRP is a possibility for you. If you go and talk to Doc Linville, he can explain to you the same way PRP has been used for joint rejuvenation. Amongst all of professional sports, PRP can be used on your scalp. It can get your hair to grow in stronger and thicker and give you more of a surface area cover because of the fact that when you look at it, the blood rejuvenation is taking care of it just like fertilizing your lawn. Let Doc take a look at it because Doc's going to tell you, oh, PRP will take care of that. Or if he thinks it's too far gone, he'll tell you about the procedure I had, the NeoGraft procedure, and it might be a game changer for you like it was for me. Doc said, let me sit down and talk to you. Let me explain it to you. When he told me that genetically you're never going to lose the hair on the sides and the back of your head, no matter how much you go bald in other areas, I was amazed. I didn't know that. And then he said, so what I basically do is I take some of that hair that never is going to go anywhere, and I put it where you need it. Maybe it's your hairline like it was for me. Maybe it's a bald spot up on top and back. He can take care of it. And 95 to 99% of the follicles that he's going to move are going to stay and grow, be with you for the long haul because they're taking from a spot that they're never going to go away. And you're going to love the results. I do. You can be the next in line. Go to 975hair.com right now. And check out all the information. Sign up for an appointment right there online. Do it online. Do it through that 975hair.com because you get the consultation for free. Everybody else pays $150. You get it for free because you listen to us and you want to go to see him. He's going to explain the procedure. They're going to tell you all the pros and cons. They're going to tell you how everything works. And then you're going to decide on your own whether you want to do it or not. There's no signing on the dotted line. There's no commitment financially or otherwise. You just get information, ask questions, get answers, and see if the NeoGraft is right for you. Check him out today. Tell him I sent you by because I think he's the best in the business by far. Go to 975hair.com.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Lowe's knows July 4th savings are worth celebrating. Right now, get up to 40% off select major appliances and get an additional 10% off two or more select major appliances. Plus, get three Scotts NatureScapes 1.5 cubic foot mulch bags for just $10. These deals are coming in hot. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 7/9. Selection varies by location. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details. Excludes Alaska and Hawaii.